Hello and welcome to All Things Apostolic. My name is Casey Sees.
And I'm Brian Williams. And today we're going to continue our discussion, part two of Essentials for Church Planting.
We try to make things colorful. We have banners. We've spent money. To make ourselves look bigger than we are. When you look at the outside of my church, it looks like a Hallmark Christmas card with, you know, it literally used to be a white church with black shutters. Wow. I mean, you can't make this stuff up. The trees are all around it. It looks like a Christmas card if it had snow everywhere. And so we took it, we painted it, modern colors. A couple years ago, my son convinced me to get a big LED wall, and we spent money on an LED wall that has come in. It's expensive, and I have friends like, hey, man, like, you know, how'd you afford that? Like, you just do it. You just make it happen. And so when people come in, they realize.
Can I stop you there for just a second?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How much of an impact did those types of things have on your service? Like, you're saying, you know, excellence. You know, I'm with you there. Like, we are on the same page. You got to appear to be and be what you're trying to be a big church. At the same time, you're also describing a situation where you're running the projector slides and holding your baby at the same time. So it's not perfect either. So you're kind of embracing this world where you can have revival and not be perfect. Your church be perfect. At the same time, you know, I know how you and your wife perform as musicians and singers. You are very, very good. So you're bringing all that to the table. But how much of those particular things that you're doing, like the colorful, the logos or the
signs
and stuff, and then the LED wall, are those things contributing to what you're doing in a positive way? And what is that happening there?
It contributes to the overall culture that when someone has come, especially in both of our areas, when they've come from another church, a larger church, they've visited three or four other churches and they've got, you know, big screens and a band and lots of people. It just, to me, it lets them know we're taking ourselves seriously.
Yeah.
We're not just some little scrub church in the back of a neighborhood that's just, you know, struggling and hoping that, you know, somebody will find us. We are the number one, and you can do it when we get done with this podcast. When you search Apostolic Pentecostal in Atlanta metro area, we're the number one. Number one, not the larger churches that are around me, that everybody knows their name, we are.
Yeah.
That stuff just to another thing I try to do is I try to think like a customer, guest. When I'm looking at this church, when I roll up and I see the building, okay, it's taken care of. It's got nice paint. It looks good. Everything's manicured. Okay. So they take pride in themselves. When they walk in the door, they're being welcomed by greeters and they're being welcomed by ushers and people are coming by and saying hello to them. So it gives that, more of a home-like family type cult. That's kind of our culture. Family is kind of our culture. The screen has helped us with stuff like VBS and being able to take our VBS from cardboard, literal building cardboard props out of boxes and tape and paint to utilizing the, you know, image of what the theme is and underwater stuff, you know, the water's moving and in this visual age that we live in. So I don't think you have to have it because we didn't have it forever. We just got it.
Yeah.
But it just is another one of those enhancements.
Right.
That lets the guests know when they show up. Oh, okay.
They're serious.
They're serious.
They care.
And these cats ain't playing around. They plan on being here for a while.
And I've seen the same thing kind of happen. And you deal with temptations. At least I do. I deal with temptations of and maybe perceptions of how I think people feel about church. Now, I grew up in a church where it was like, you're not supposed to care about what the guests think. You just be apostolic, and that's the way I go. Okay, I get it. I understand. But I can't help but think when guests come in, they see all these people around because we're a campus church, so we get some help from our main campus, and they look very Pentecostal. Like, we dress up for church, okay, when we come to church at our church. So when people come in and they're not so dressed up, you want to make them feel welcome. And the temptation is to lower your, I don't want to say your standard, but maybe I don't have to dress up as much. But I think that's the wrong play because you're also reducing the level of seriousness that you take for church, you know? And so I think can you talk about what, the seriousness that you have about your church and the difference that people see when they come in, you know?
You know, and dress is a good example because I just had a young man I met at Starbucks and he just hooked on to me. And every time I see him there, he can talk for hours. And he hadn't been in a couple of months. And then yesterday he shows up yesterday wearing another church's t-shirt, a pair of shorts, and sneakers. I'm just like, he's never done that. The whole time he had came, before he would wear khakis and a button up or whatever. And of course, we don't say anything. Yeah. But what I've always taught our people is, and this is how we were taught at Bible college. If you have the line here, if the bar's here, your people are probably going to live about right here.
Yeah.
So like you said, if you bring your bar down to meet them at the casual area, then they're going to bring it down to here.
Yeah.
So you're never really, we keep it here, and in time they get used to the culture and they rise up to meet our culture and our expectations, like you said, not the other way around. When I go to someone's home, there's people who want you to take your shoes off at the front door. I've never been that way. I mean, that's to me is kind of weird, but there's some people who are really just, take your shoes off. Well, I don't keep my shoes on. I take them off and it's awkward and I feel weird, but I'll deal with it. I'm in their house. I don't go in their house and change their culture to suit me. And so that's kind of the core of your church. Like you said, they dress up, man, we're dressing up for church. And eventually those people are going to realize, I'm the only one in this church that is in a t-shirt and, cargo pants. And I might need to at least start wearing a button down and some khakis. And when they come with button down and khakis, you're like, All right,
here we go.
We're making progress. And eventually you start talking about, suits and stuff, and they start asking you where you get your suit from and where, I don't know how to,
man. And you're like, I have a son that does this.
Yes. We will hook you up and bring you to the storehouse. Yes. Hey, I tell you what I have done in the past, and these would be more not with a guest per se, but I treat my young people like they're my kids. Again, our culture here is family. We're family, and so I have taken many young men shopping and have bought them their first suit, first pair of shoes, first dice belt, time. I've done it. I've invested the money. They're still here today.
Right.
They don't forget that kind of stuff. Yeah. If I want to teach this guy how to dress, let's go shopping.
Yeah.
And I've taken them to K&G, which you probably have heard of those. And you know, you get two suits for, you know, $99.99. And now they've got two suits, and you help them show them how to get ties and goes with shirts. And man, it's great for them. And I love it. It's a joy for me. And at the same time, I'm showing them the bar.
Yeah.
This is the bar. Yeah. And then now they love suits, and they love to go get a new suit, and they'll come in, and the kids will come in, they'll show me their new tie they got, and we make a big deal about it. And so, yeah, I agree with you. You don't lower your standard. You keep yours where it's at, and you hope they come up to meet you.
Right. I have another question here, and it's a little shifting here, but I know that you'll have an opinion on this, but your kids, and we've talked to other church planters, and we're talking about a little bit of the balance that pastors have to kind of have with their family and the impact that church planning can have on your kids and how to deal with that. So can you talk a little bit about that, the impact that it has, and what do you do to kind of balance your life in a way that is focused on your family as well?
I tell you what I've done with my kids from the very beginning is when I'm at home, when I'm anywhere but the church, I'm your dad.
Yeah.
And when I'm at the church, I'm your dad, depending on the situation. If you need your dad, you come in that office and you come in here and tell me what you need.
Yeah.
Because you're my child. When I've had to play a pastor card, there's always been the role. I've always kept the roles separated, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
Church planting, and thank God for him giving me this revelation, understanding, or whatever it was. I had my kids involved from day one. I remember when Emerson was 6 and 7 years old, helping me put the trailer onto the hitch of the Dodge Durango, locking it all down, making sure it was secure. And then us, you know, he would help me back up the truck. 6, help me back up the truck and help me unload the trailer. And my daughter, the daughter was a little different. She did a few things inside with mom, but my boy was out there with me unloading. Mm-hmm. And I'm telling you, that kid learned how to hook up sound systems at 7. He'd be hooking up the sound system while I'd be, you know, getting the keyboard set up. And we had a Dr. Rhythm 3 by Boss drum machine. And bro, I got so good I could do feels on that drum machine. And while I'm flipping the words and while we're worshiping all at the same time, you just learn how to, you know, but the kids have always been involved in the work. This is our church.
Right.
And that has made a difference, because to this day, right now, my son is at IBC. He just made Praise. He's the drummer for Praise, the top group. He'll be playing on the album this year. Him and another drummer will probably end up like halfing the songs up. And this is his second semester. He was playing drums in our church at 12 years old, couldn't even hardly, you know, sitting on the seat. You know, he was keeping a beat and just keeping a beat. And yeah. we let him play. That stuff sounds like, you know, backwoods church playing. Just put them boys on there, just let them play. Yeah. It don't matter if you hit wrong. Some of that is just wisdom.
Right.
It's locking that kid into, this is my church. Now, Emerson is an amazing drummer. My daughter, Savannah, even with Tourette syndrome, is one of our worship leaders. And I'm telling you, when she sings, the Holy Ghost moves.
Yeah.
And she's been singing with me and her mom since she was old enough to figure the part out and roll with it.
Wow.
And to this day, she, like yesterday, she was singing. I'll look at her every now and then. And now my 12-year-old, is up there singing now. And she'll have a solo part. And I'll just smile. And Dad gets excited because that's his baby up there involved in the kingdom of God. Pastor gets excited because he realizes she's connected to kingdom work. And then when I get through with church, I get to be Dad and be like, girl, you tore it up today. That's what I'm talking. And just brag on them and brag on them and brag on them. And, you know, you always help them overlook the mistakes. You know, we went traveling one time, evangelizing, preaching out. Emerson played the drums with us, and the drums stool had wheels on it. And he kept rolling until he fell off the platform. The chair did. He didn't fall, but the chair, he jumped off the chair before it hit the ground. And, you know, just learning mistakes, learning, having funny stories that you look back now and you think, man, you know, having your kid involved in the work of your church plant is the number one way to keep that kid connected to that church. Because I've watched my kids now, they take things personally. Mm. Like, this is our church.
Right.
Why would they get offended at that? Why would they leave because of that? And you're playing dad and pastor card here, like, okay, look, people are people. You're gonna have to just let it go, pray, move on. You can't. Some things you just can't fix. And that's a lot. That's my son and my older daughter, and now my younger daughter. She's just a chip off the old block. She's me in a female form. God help this world. And she's the same way, very, you know, just like 110. Let's go, let's roll. But to me, that's how I've done it. It's worked. That worked for me. Obviously, there's stories where pastors' kids have backslid. One thing we never did when our kids were small is we never talked about anything negative to do with the church, ever. Never. We did not talk about people in the church. There's things that they don't know to this day on the reason why somebody left. They just think, you know, they just moved or whatever. And I wanted it to be like that because I didn't want to start planting that seed of bitterness in children who can't do anything with that information. So to me, keeping them connected, involved, was a major key, and being their dad when we're at home, I'm dad.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, just I'm on the floor wrestling with my son. I'm picking on my daughter. I mean, we're just normal people, and they know that, you know, when we go somewhere, I'm their dad. Now, when we're at church and I'm preaching, I'm pastor. They do get on to me a lot about telling stories about them. And I'm guilty of that, but I don't know if that answers your question, but that's what works for me.
That's good. That's good. So as we close out here today, I do have a couple questions. They're both related. Is if you were talking to someone that was, you know, maybe in their 20s, Brian and I are, just a decade behind you, so we're in our 40s, so we're not too far apart here. But regardless of age, if you were talking to someone that was going out to plant a church, or maybe they took over a smaller church or transitioned, have you written a book? Is there any other books you'd recommend? Is there anything like, you know, a resource that you say, hey, this is really good, and I think this will help you understand some stuff? Is there anything that you could offer on that?
Yes, sir. I have not written a book. I did help produce a Bible study that is following the pattern. You can get it from apostolicgraphics.com. We have it in Spanish. I was raised Trinitarian. So this Bible study really, really, really helps Trinitarians realize they're wrong before they realize they're wrong. Mm. It's just following the patterns. There's a pattern through the scriptures, and you from the very beginning with the definition of a pattern, you're setting the tone of if you follow the pattern, you get what the pattern, you know, was designed to produce. And by the time you get to baptism, they're agreeing with you that you need to be baptized in Jesus' name. We've had great success with that. So I am a part of that in the development of that Bible study. It's a great Bible study. It's you can do it in about an hour or so. It's a one-hit Bible study. And that's good for new converts, new people that don't know Trinitarians. It is perfect for Trinitarians. This book is more on the spiritual level. Do not agree with his theology at all, but Andy Stanley, Visioneering. Okay. This book, Visioneering by Andy Stanley, as a church planter, in my opinion, it's about Nehemiah, and he paints a picture with the wall and Nehemiah and the people having a mind to work, a heart to work. He paints a picture that is absolutely driven for church planters. If you think about it that way, it will help you. And I promise you will preach the content out of that book. You will, because it's that good. On a practical level, I think that every church planter I do have people misunderstand me, so I'm glad I get to say this on a podcast, and it'll at least be recorded. When I post things about small church pastors or smaller churches, and I'm using words on purpose, because they are not a large church. They are not a mega church. They're in the rural parts of Louisiana with 30 people. I do not think it is right or fair to look at a pastor who has been faithful. Right. Just because they only have 30 people and think that they're not as qualified or as good or as whatever as the guys who run 500,000, 2,000, 3,000. Right. To me, it doesn't make sense. It's counterproductive. And if you pastor a smaller church, using the parable in Luke 14, it's not the will of God for you to stay small.
Right.
Yeah.
He said, go do it again. And this time hit people you didn't hit the first time, because I want this place to be filled. Right. So, yes, he wants a full church as bad as you do. He wants it full. But if you are doing everything you can and you're being faithful and you're plugging and you're pushing and you're driving and you're driving the vision and you're creating the culture, and you've got 50 people, then bless God, be the baddest 50-member church on this planet. And don't think bad about yourself because you only have 50, not 500. So required reading, in my opinion, and if I was over any organizational structure, this book right here would be mandatory reading for a church planter. Small Church Essentials by Carl Vaders.
Okay.
Hands down, the best resource a church planner for practical reasons could read, because it's going to say stuff like, so what if your church is small?
Right. It's good.
So what? Too often our sense of value in ministry is tied to numbers way more than it should be. We have smaller church pastors sitting around being depressed and defeated because they are simply a smaller church. Mm-hmm. We need to change that mentality and say, if you are a smaller church, so what? Be the best smaller church that anybody has ever been to in your community.
Right.
And if you will look at yourself that way, eventually you won't stay small. Okay. In time, you'll have generational growth like these mega churches have. You look at these mega churches, and it's unfair to say 60 versus 1,000. Oh, my goodness, look at that. That 60-member church, your church at 65 members is probably what? Two generations? Yeah. You've got about two generations in it. Right. Maybe three if there's a grandchild and a grandparent.
Yeah.
These mega churches are six, seven, eight generations in. The Smiths have been a part of this church since 1952.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Well, man, yeah, if the Lord tarries and we all just keep doing what we're doing, we're going to get larger. We're not going to stay smaller forever, and we won't be an average church. But embrace the size of your church without settling.
Okay.
That's that stuff that where, you know what, spend the money. You know what? Okay, so you don't have a Brian Williams, Marshall Clack, Amy Clack. You don't have a keyboard player. You don't have music people. We are without excuse in modern day church planning. There are tracks out there that if you just didn't go to Starbucks for a couple times in a week, you could afford the track and you could literally play with a full band every church service. And don't act like you're singing with a soundtrack like we did in the 80s. Act like you're live.
Okay. All right. Hey, Brother Clack, we're going to have to wrap it up. I'm seeing Brother Wilson out here on this other end of the window, and he's
looking at us. Oh, boy. I don't want to be in trouble with him.
So maybe we can catch up and do this a different time because there's so much here. Okay. Like, I feel like it's not over. You know, we're just getting started here. There's a lot of good stuff here. So can you put up your, to get your Bible study again, where is that? You said it's apostolic.
Apostolicgraphics.com. And it's graphics with an X.
Okay, graphics with an X. Okay, so he'll put that up there and you'll see it there. And then I'm sure you can get the other books on Amazon or something like that.
But, yes.
Yeah, for sure. Yes, so. Amazon. Thank you so much for coming, being with us. This has been really engaging. I learned a lot in this entire process. So let's do it again. We'll figure it out and go from there. But thanks for coming on and being with us.
Absolutely. Yes, thank you so much.
For being
with us. All right.
God bless.